Hello, I am Marcus from Behind the Scams, and my co-host today is the lovely Maya. Now Maya, I want you to do something with me for a second. If you can, look at your phone. Pick it up. That sleek little glass slab? That's basically your external brain now. It tells you where to drive, what the weather is, and, critically, who's calling you.
Hello Marcus, great to be with you today. So, we all treat caller ID like a name tag for reality. If it says mom, it's mom. If it says PPL Electric or Pacific Gas and Electric, we just believe it. We build our day around those signals.
Now here's the problem. The plumbing underneath that trust, the telecom architecture itself, is fundamentally broken. Caller ID was built in a world where everyone was assumed to be honest. That world does not exist anymore.
And scammers know it. So let's walk right into the utility urgency trap. Because this is not a $20 street scam. This is industrial-scale psychological warfare that ends with people feeding $4,000 cash into a machine at a gas station.
Picture this. It's 98 degrees in July, or 20 degrees in February. Pick your nightmare. You've got a baby napping upstairs, or a big deadline. You're distracted. Your phone rings. The screen says, PPL Electric Utilities. Local area code. Maybe even the official logo, depending on your caller ID app.
And for most of us, if we're cautious, we ignore unknown or scam likely. But this isn't that. This looks exactly like the number printed on the paper bill on your counter. So you pick up. Of course you do.
On the line is a calm, professional voice. Not a janky robocall. Real human, polished accent. This is the disconnection department. We're calling about the past due balance on the account ending in 4522. They've got those last four digits because your data was probably scooped up in a breach and sold.
Instant credibility. And your first instinct is, no way, I'm on auto pay. You made a mistake. I would say that. You would say that. We all would.
And the script is ready for that. I do see you're on auto pay. But the payment for the commercial rate supply portion was rejected by your bank.
Commercial rate supply portion. That sounds official, and I have absolutely no idea what it means. And that's the point. Nobody reads line items on their bill. You just look at the total.
Exactly. The scammer doesn't say, you didn't pay. You'd fight that. They say, the delivery charge cleared. But the supply charge was flagged because your residential meter was accidentally registered under a commercial rate. Suddenly, it's not you versus them, it's, oh no, some bureaucratic mix-up.
Your posture shifts from defensive to confused. You start problem-solving instead of doubting. And that's when they drop the hammer. Because this account is flagged as delinquent commercial, a disconnection truck is already en route. Technician is 30 minutes out.
Now, in the real world, utilities like PPL send multiple notices, letters, emails, robocalls, before they ever disconnect. They do not run a 30-minute countdown clock. But in that moment, you're not thinking about policy. Your brain is juggling. Weird commercial charge, freezing weather, baby upstairs, work deadline, truck on the way.
Your mental RAM is maxed out. This is cognitive load. Too many puzzle pieces at once. And when that load spikes, skepticism just falls off the table. Fraud experts call it being under the ether.
Biologically, your amygdala, your threat detector, takes over. Fight or flight. The prefrontal cortex, the part that says, does this process make sense? Gets shoved in the trunk. Add authority bias. Let me transfer you to my supervisor. And suddenly, you're highly compliant without realizing it.
Okay. But all of this only works because I picked up the phone in the first place. So how did my phone get tricked into thinking this call was from my utility company?
To answer that, we have to go back, way back, to the analog era and something called phone phreaking. There was this Captain Crunch cereal whistle that emitted a tone at 2600 hertz. That exact pitch was what AT&T's equipment used to signal that a trunk line was open.
So kids with cereal toys were hacking the phone company?
Pretty much. Early hackers, freakers, blew the whistle into the handset. The system thought the line was free, and they routed free long-distance calls. Then people built hardware like blue boxes to generate tones. Later came the orange box, which mimicked the Bell 202 signal used for caller ID during call waiting. You could literally inject audio into the line, so the phone displayed a number you chose.
So back then you needed soldering irons and deep telecom nerd knowledge. A physical box.
Exactly. Fast forward to today. It's all digital. Voice over IP. Calls are just data packets with headers, like email. One field is the caller ID string. And here's the fatal flaw. The system mostly trusts whatever the sender types in that field. There's no global cop verifying it's really PPL Electric.
So a scammer pays for some VoIP software, puts PPL Electric and the legit-looking number into a text box, hits dial, and my phone politely prints that lie on my screen.
That's it. It's like writing the president's name and the return address on an envelope. The Postal Service doesn't check your ID. Telecom firms are trying to patch this with a protocol called STIR-SHAKEN, which cryptographically signs many legitimate calls. But rollout is uneven, especially with international routes and older networks.
And criminals adapt. They lean on neighbor spoofing, right? Copying your area code and first three digits so it feels hyper-local and less suspicious to the filters, and to you.
Exactly. And according to reporting like Cyber Insights 2026, you don't even have to be a telecom genius. You can buy spoofing tools and whole scam templates for a couple hundred bucks as a subscription. Industrialized crime as a service.
So now we've got the perfect fake caller ID, the commercial rate word salad, the 30-minute cutoff clock, and my logical brain is out to lunch. Next step? They're about to walk me right out my front door.
So you're on the phone with the supervisor. You finally say, "Fine, I'll pay the difference. Just don't cut my power. Do you take Visa?" And here comes a key move. They say no.
Which, on paper, makes no sense. If they're this sophisticated, why not just take my card and be done with it?
Because credit cards are slow and reversible. If you wake up from the ether tomorrow, you can call the real utility, realize there was never a truck, and hit your card issuer with a chargeback. The money can be yanked back and their fake merchant account gets burned.
So they need money that moves instantly, can't be clawed back, and basically disappears into the shadows. No buyer protection, no dispute button.
Exactly. Fraud analysts sometimes call it the digital getaway car. Historically, that was Western Union. Go wire money to this guy in Jamaica. But Western Union got wise. Warnings on forms, trained clerks asking questions, and that human friction killed a lot of scams.
So now the getaway car is the CVC kiosk, convertible virtual currency, the Bitcoin ATM at the corner gas station.
Right. The scammer says something like, "Because your account is officially delinquent commercial, we can't accept standard electronic payments. You're required to use a certified cash terminal to clear the block." They never say Bitcoin ATM. They dress it up as Federal Payment Gateway or Utility Settlement Terminal.
And the wild part, they convince you to leave your house. You get in the car, you drive 20 minutes to a random gas station, and instead of using that drive to think, "Wait, this is insane," they stay glued to your ear.
Golden rule of the hustle, never hang up. They frame it as white glove service. "I'll stay on the line to make sure the field tech receives the cancellation code as soon as your payment posts." In reality, they're piloting you by remote control. "Turn here. Don't talk to the clerk. Go straight to the machine in the back."
And when you're standing in front of this giant glowing kiosk, you're thinking, "Why does my utility company use this weird machine?" But they already have a story. This is the certified terminal our commercial accounts use. Bureaucratic enough to sound boringly legit if you're panicking.
Then they text you a QR code. "This is your personal code. Scan it so the payment links to your account." In reality, per FinCEN alerts, that QR code just preloads the scammer's crypto wallet address into the ATM.
You scan. The machine asks for cash. You feed in $4,000 bill by bill and hit confirm. And on the blockchain side,
your physical cash is converted to Bitcoin and broadcast to that wallet. That transaction is cryptographically final. No undo button, no oops. The scammer usually has scripts that immediately split those funds into multiple new wallets. Maybe run them through a mixer or flip them into a privacy coin like Monero. By the time you walk back to your car, your money's in another galaxy.
Meanwhile, those kiosks are charging brutal fees, like 7 to 20%. Out of your $4,000, maybe $600 to $800 just evaporates into fees. And the scammer doesn't care at all.
To them, it's just overhead. They'd rather have 80% of something irreversible than risk 100% getting clawed back. Speed and finality beat efficiency.
And as terrifying as that is, it's all happening with regular human voices on the line. But the next wave adds a different monster, AI. Let's talk about voice cloning.
Right. The Cyber Insights 2026 reporting talks about a 3-second rule. It used to take hours of studio quality recordings to clone a voice. Now, a scammer needs maybe 3 seconds of clear audio. "Hey guys, check out this latte," on Instagram is enough.
They feed that into a generative model, type any script they want, and the system spits it back in your exact voice. Cadence, vocal fry, little quirks, everything.
Apply that to the utility scam. You push back and they say, "Fine, the regional director will call you." 5 minutes later, you answer, and it sounds exactly like the real CEO you saw on a local news spot. Because they scraped his interview off YouTube and cloned his voice to personally confirm the emergency.
And then there's the grandparent scam, which honestly makes me furious. Before, the scammer would say, "Grandma, it's me." And if she said, "You don't sound like Jimmy," they blamed a cold or a broken nose. Now, Grandma picks up and hears what sounds exactly like her grandson sobbing, gasping, "Grandma, please, I was in an accident. They're going to arrest me."
All built from a single cheerful clip he posted online. The emotional violence of that is hard to overstate. You bypass logic entirely and go straight to raw panic and compliance.
And it doesn't stop at audio. We have to talk about Hong Kong, the $25 million deepfake video call.
Yeah, early 2024. A finance worker gets a message from their CFO about a secret, high-priority transfer. The worker is skeptical and does the right thing. "Let's get on a video call so I can verify this." So they join a call and see the CFO and several colleagues. Familiar faces, people they know. They talk through the deal. Everyone nods, answers questions. It all feels legit.
Only afterward, we learn the punchline. That worker was the only real person on the call. Every other face, CFO and coworkers, was a real-time deepfake built from older video footage. And on the strength of that fake meeting, the worker moved the equivalent of about $25 million. Gone.
That case blows up the old advice of trust but verify. If the verification step, hearing the voice, seeing the face on video, can itself be forged, we're in a new era security folks call zero trust. You can't automatically trust your eyes or ears anymore.
And while the tech arms race rages in the background, the next battle is waiting at your bank. Because once the money's gone, you're sprinting into that branch begging someone to make you whole. So you've just lost $4,000 at a kiosk, or your company wired millions. Your next move is obvious. You run to your bank and say, "I was robbed, fix this." And the bank says, "You authorized it." Arms crossed, sympathy face, but no refund.
Legally, in the US, that's often where things land today. It all comes down to how the rules define unauthorized. Under Regulation E, Reg E, if someone steals your debit card or hacks your login and moves money without your knowledge, that's unauthorized. The bank usually has to make you whole.
But in an APP scam, authorize push payment, the instruction comes from you. Under extreme psychological duress, yes. Coached by a criminal, yes. But technically, you logged in, passed authentication, and hit send.
So banks say, "We just executed your order. We can't be on the hook every time someone talks you into a bad decision." That creates a massive liability gap for victims.
And I can hear someone saying, well, if you typed your password and sent crypto to a random wallet, that's on you. But that analogy falls apart when you realize what the banks actually see under the hood.
Exactly. It's less like you leaving your car running with the keys inside, and more like the bank watching you drive your car to a location they know is a chop shop. They see data we don't. The recipient account was opened yesterday. Money rushes in and out. It's already flagged as a likely mule. If they see all that and still push your payment through with no questions, that starts to look negligent.
The UK has basically agreed with that logic. Their payment systems regulator rolled out rules that flipped the script on APP fraud.
Right. In the UK, for many of these scams, banks now have to reimburse victims up to around £85,000, often within days, even when the customer technically authorized the transfer under manipulation. And the clever part, the loss is split 50-50 between the sending bank and the receiving bank.
So the bank that holds the mule account suddenly cares a lot about who they're onboarding. Because every shady account they let in might cost them real money later.
It forces both sides of the transaction to police their pipelines instead of shrugging and blaming the victim. Meanwhile, reports like Deloitte's are warning US losses from this kind of fraud could hit the tens of billions in the next few years. Pressure's building, but the rules here haven't caught up yet.
Until they do, the big question is, can tech on the bank side save us from ourselves in real time? That's where behavioral biometrics comes in, and I find this both creepy and amazing.
Same. Companies like BioCatch focus on this. The idea is, passwords, device IDs, cookies, those can all be stolen or spoofed. But your behavior on a device is much harder to fake. How you hold your phone, how fast you scroll, the rhythm of your typing, it's like a digital fingerprint.
And under the ether, that fingerprint changes. Your hand shakes a little from adrenaline. Your phone sensors can pick that up. You type like you're being dictated to. A few digits, pause. A few digits, pause. Because someone on the line is reading a secure account number.
On top of that, the banking app can tell you're on an active phone call while you're setting up a brand new wire recipient. That combination, new payee, high amount, live call, tremors, weird typing cadence, lights up the risk dashboard.
And instead of quietly letting the transfer zip away, the system can slam on the brakes. Or at least throw a giant speed bump in your face.
Exactly. We worship frictionless everything. One-tap pay, instant transfers. But in fraud, friction is a feature. The app can pop up a full-screen warning. We detect you're on a call. Is someone claiming to be from your utility or the IRS asking you to send money? This is a common scam. That explicit language can jolt your logical brain back online and snap the spell.
So that's the tech counterattack. But you and I both know we can't just wait for the perfect app update. We need a human survival playbook people can remember the next time their phone rings.
Let's build it. Rule number one, hang up, look up, call back. The moment anyone on the phone uses words like urgent disconnection, police, IRS, or your kids' or grandkids' name in a panic, hang up. No goodbye, no arguing. Just cut the line.
Then look up the real number yourself. Not the one that called you, not the one they texted. Use a paper bill, the back of your card, or type the company's official site into your browser.
And then call back using that verified number. Hi, I just got a call saying my electricity's being cut in 30 minutes. In real cases, they'll tell you flat out, no, your account is fine, that was a scam. That feeling of relief is worth the rude hang-up every time.
Next, silence unknown callers. I live by this. If you're not in my contacts, you go to voicemail. People worry, but what if it's the hospital or my kid's school? If it's real, they'll leave a message. Scammers usually won't because their scripts rely on having you live on the line to push you into the ether.
Another non-negotiable. Never read out multi-factor authentication codes to a human, ever. If you're on the phone and someone says, I'm sending you a code, read it back so I can verify you. That is almost certainly them trying to break into your account in real time.
Those codes are for you to type into an app or website, not recite like a spell. If anyone asks for it, it's a scam. 100%, no exceptions.
If the worst happens and you do send money, you've got what I call the golden hour. Act immediately. Call your bank, even at night, and say the words, "Authorized push payment fraud." That phrase can trigger their fraud playbook and maybe freeze a mule account before the funds disappear through crypto or laundering networks.
If you wait 24 hours because you're ashamed, it's basically gone. And I want to say this as clearly as I can. If you've fallen for something like this, it's not because you're stupid. You were outgunned.
You were up against professionals who refined their scripts across millions of calls, using psychology, telecom loopholes, and increasingly, AI. That is not a fair fight.
Report it to your bank, to local police if appropriate, and to places like the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center. Not just for you, but so regulators have the data to finally close these gaps.
One last trap to name, the double dip. After they steal your first payment, they might circle back and say, "We can refund you, but you need to pay a release fee." That's just scam number two, piggybacking on scam number one.
If you've already sent money and someone asks you to send more to unlock it, stop. The original money is gone. Do not throw good money after bad chasing it.
So we land on this. In a world obsessed with instant everything, speed is the scammer's best weapon. The faster they can push you, the easier it is to overload your brain and shut down your judgment.
Which means slowing down is your armor. Let it ring to voicemail. Take a breath before you act. Add your own friction back in, especially when someone is trying very hard to rush you.
Because the only person who truly needs you to move fast is the one trying to rob you. Write that somewhere you'll see it.
Check on your parents, talk to your kids about voice cloning and weird payment requests, and maybe, tonight, glance at your bank activity with fresh eyes.
We'll keep unpacking this arms race, AI versus AI, banks versus scammers, in future episodes. But for now, hang up, look up, call back.
I'm Maya. Thanks for spending this time with us here at Behind the Scams.
And I'm Marcus. Remember to always stay sharp, stay safe, and we'll catch you on the next one.